ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ईशुक उवाच यथिर्ययाति सम्याति आयथिर व्यथिकृति षड् इमे नहुषास्यासन् इन्द्रियाणि वदेहिनः। Shukadeva Goswami said, O King Parikshit, as the embodied soul has six senses, King Nahusha had six sons named Yati, Yayati, Samyati, Ayati, Vyati, and Kriti. Rajyam Naichadyati Pitra Dattam Tat Parinamavat Yatra Pravishta Purusha Atmanam Navabhujate. When one enters the post of king or head of the government, one cannot understand the meaning of self-realization. Knowing this, Yati, the eldest son of Nahusha, did not accept the power to rule, although it was offered by his father. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Self-realization is the prime objective of human civilization, and it is regarded seriously by those who are situated in the mode of goodness and have developed the brahminical qualities. Kshatriyas are generally endowed with material qualities conducive to gaining material wealth and enjoying sense gratification. But those who are spiritually advanced are not interested in material opulence. Indeed, they accept only the bare necessities of life, of spiritual advancement in self-realization. It is specifically mentioned here that if one enters political life, especially in the modern day, one loses the chance of human perfection. Nonetheless, one can attain the highest perfection if one hears Srimad Bhagavatam. This hearing is described as Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Maharaj Parikshit was involved in politics, but because at the end of his life he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami, he attained perfection very easily. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore suggested, Stane stita sruti gatam tanuvan manobhir, ye praya shojita jito pyasi tais trilokyam. Regardless of whether one is in the mode of passion, ignorance, or goodness, if one regularly hears Srimad Bhagavatam from the self-realized soul, one is freed from the bondage of material involvement. Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 9, Chapter 18, entitled King Yayati Regains His Youth. Text 1 and 2. We're beginning an incredibly fascinating and instructive story on the life of King Yayati. In today's verses, we find King Nahusha. He had six sons. The eldest was Yati, and he was the natural person who was entitled to be the king of the world. The highest seat of wealth and power that any person could attain at that time, and far greater than anyone could ever attain at this time. And how people will do anything, moral or immoral, to achieve such influence, popularity, power, and wealth. We see in today's world, as well as throughout history, what people have done to achieve even a fraction of this position. One of the famous monuments of India is the Taj Mahal. People from all over the world go there. Nobody knows what it is. It's the tomb of a lady, which in itself is nice, but that's usually not what people go all the way, all around the world to see. But practically any Western person, except for some devotees, other devotees go there too. They have to go. I'm not going to mention names, but so many people, they come to India, and we have to go to the Taj Mahal. No matter what else, we have to go there because that's what India is symbolized with. And almost every person I've talked to, these are Western people, afterward they say it was the lowest point of our whole visit. But we had to go there. We can't go home without a picture of ourselves standing in front of the Taj Mahal. It's almost sacrilegious. But Shah Jahan, he built it for his wife. And the reason he built it for his wife is because she had so many children for him. A lot of children. And he was so grateful to her because she gave him so many children. Well, it was a joint effort, obviously, but... Still, you know, she went through the pregnancy, she raised them, so she was very happy. He was very happy, and then when she died, he wanted to, in one sense, he wanted to offer his gratitude to his wife who gave him so many children. But in another sense, I'm sure he wanted to show the world, for all time, the greatness of what he could accomplish, and his wife was a good excuse to do that. Love that will never die, something like that. His dedication, his prowess to build something like that. But then what happened? One of his sons, Aurangzeb, became envious of his other sons. He wanted to have all the power himself. So Aurangzeb killed one of his brothers, imprisoned other ones, and put his father in jail just so that he could usurp the power. What kind of example? And yet some of the main roads in Delhi are named after him to this day. Oh, I see. Some power, some prestige, some wealth. People kill their brothers, imprison their fathers, will do anything to achieve it. How many lawsuits are there between brothers in India, all over the world, over, you know, the estate of what the father left behind, or the money that is there in their businesses? It's a very common thing. In fact, it's more common that brothers, sometimes sisters, they're fighting in courts, or they become bitter enemies over, you know, who gets control of power, money. It's more common than brothers working together to utilize it, as their, you know, parents worked so hard to arrange for them. One of my dear godbrothers, Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, went to college. He was working on his PhD at Cambridge University. And he told me, if you think there's politics in ISKCON, you should see the politics in the academic world, in the hierarchy of the academic world. There is so much cutthroat for people to get recognition, prestige, positions. Unbelievable what people do with each other. In practically any field, whether it's academic, whether it's industry, business, politics, sports. I was with one mother, and she's the daughter of one of our devotees. She was telling me that her son was in a particular type of sport. He's just 8 years old. And the other children in the league of his is about 8 years old, and they travel around America playing. She said she has never in her life seen such cutthroat, cruel, harsh politics as the parents of these children, trying to get their son on the team. Right? And it's not that they make a lot of money out of it, because they're from very wealthy neighborhoods. They don't need money from their son playing a sport. It's just the prestige of having their son on the team. She said she just can't believe it, how much they're willing to practically destroy each other and do all kinds of, you know, whether it's bribing or knocking somebody down or anything, to get their son on the team. These children are 8 years old. Hare Krishna. So wherever there's possession, wherever there's prestige, wherever there's wealth, wherever there's power, the history of the world is how people have the tendency to do anything, everything, to somehow or other get it. And here we find Yati. It's all being given to him. He doesn't have to do anything for it. To be the king of the world, not India, the world. Now, what kind of palaces they had at that time? And Maharaj Yati, although it was so much, he was so popular, everyone wanted him to do it. Even his brothers wanted him to do it. His father needed him to do it. He refused. He didn't have to work for it. He didn't have to go to school for it. All he had to do was just say, yes. And he was totally qualified to do it also. But he said, absolutely no, I will not do it, because it will disturb my spiritual life. Because when you have such a position like this, you become so much in competition with so many people, and you have to, whatever you have to maintain what you have, and there's so many pressures and so many stresses. The purpose of human life is perfection, self-realization. Therefore, he refused. He didn't want to be caught up in the implications and the complications and all the other stuff that comes along with it. As we sometimes say, the tendency is to become a prisoner of your own success. People work so hard to achieve a position, but then to maintain that position, to keep that position, it's not that you get there and then you say, okay, now I can relax. Because the more you have, the more there's predators trying to take it away. And so many other complications. People around you become envious. They become greedy. You don't know who to trust. You don't know who not to trust. It's like taking a noose or taking a rope and spending a tremendous amount of your time and energy to make it into a noose and then to put it around your neck. And then to build a magnificent skyscraper where you jump from. Because sometimes what we work so hard for with the promise of happiness becomes the cause of such suffering and misery. And yet because of this rajaguna mixed with tamaguna, the mode of passion mixed with ignorance, we become so entangled in the consciousness of having it and getting it and maintaining it that even though we see it's making us miserable, we don't see it. Somehow or other, we're just so caught up. We have to keep going. It's turning myself into a monster. It's turning other people around me into a monster. It's breaking my relationships. It's so much struggle, so much tension. It's affecting my health, but I can't do without it. That's the way the mode of passion is. Gets us so caught up in the name of happiness. And sometimes Maya makes us think that we are happy, even though we know for sure that we're not. The mind is such a thing that Maya can play with. We see so much suffering and so many miseries, but with the little happiness we are getting from it, which is buried by this other stuff, we think we need it. This is my happiness. So here's an example. King Yati. I don't want it. I want to be a sadhu. And there are so many examples like this. Raghunath Das Goswami. He was the singular heir to a fortune that was worth perhaps billions. And not only did he say no repeatedly, but he had to literally make tremendous efforts to escape. He could have just said, after he left home and he was dragged back and he had 11 guards surrounding him 24 hours a day to keep him from leaving, he could have said, it's Krishna's arrangement. I'm just supposed to keep all these billions of dollars and keep all this property and have this beautiful wife and live happily. It's Krishna's arrangement. But after repeatedly practically
being dragged back. He was determined to escape. And once he escaped, how did he live? First he was a beggar in Puri, and then he was just eating the decomposed rice that cows would spit out because it was not palatable to them. That's all he ate. Just took the inner hard portion of it and washed it. Just wore a kopan, a torn kopan. Slept under trees. He was seeking a higher wealth than anything this world could conceive of. Everything is so much perception. No two people could see the same thing the same way. Yesterday I was speaking to a professor of quantum physics for a couple hours. We had a beautiful conversation. We were sharing our thoughts and realizations. And we really had very different perspectives because he's a PhD professor of quantum physics and I got my education in a cave up in the Himalayas. After one semester of a junior college. And, you know, frankly, I don't even know what quantum physics is. I have some ideas. But obviously we see the world through different paradigm of vision. And he was explaining, because everything is so subjective, no matter how objective we try to be, still, whatever we see, whatever we hear, whatever we think is being filtered through our consciousness and our conditioning and our egos. So nobody could see the same thing the same way. As simple as this flower. Although we're seeing the same thing, there is no two living entities in Brahma's creation that actually see the same thing. We may see the same, you know, molecular formations that create this lotus flower that I happen to be holding now. And for those who may be listening to the tape, it's actually a real lotus flower. Sometimes devotees talk about lotuses in any topic that they're talking, but this is actually a lotus flower. But we all see it we're perceiving it according to our consciousness. Not only we all see it different, but even each and every one of us, at each moment, we may be seeing it in a different way. Yes, because of the state of consciousness. If we're in a good mood, we see the lotus flower and we think, oh, how nice. And if we're in a terrible mood, we see the lotus flower and we say, so what? You know, what's so great about lotus flowers? So the mind is always changing, and the ego, everyone has their own conditioned state of consciousness. So he was giving an example that if a person is born blind, and you try to explain to him what seeing is like, and he, you know, he's a scientist, author of books. He was telling me what it takes to see. Forgive me, but I can't repeat all the the technicalities of what he was saying, of how, you know, the atomic particles and what it is, and then how the light infractions on that, and this light reflects, and then it goes into the retina of the eye, and what happens there, and how it impulses and goes into the brain. He was going all this technicalities. He said, you could tell a blind man all this stuff, and he'll have no idea what it means to see. Because unless you experience it, you just can't understand it. Ram Dass Ji, so nice to see you. I didn't welcome to Radha Gopinath. I didn't recognize you, I'm sorry. I didn't see you properly because of... I'm seeing a lotus at the end of the room. So he was talking like this, and it's true. According to our experienced life, that's the way we're perceiving things. So for Raghunath Das Goswami, for Yati Maharaj, they're seeing everything in the context of self-realization, the purpose of life. So while one person is craving for wealth and power, while another person is very much afraid of wealth and power, these people are indifferent to it because they're seeing everything according to the perception of what will help me to actually love God. And this is actually the vision of real humanity. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. The Brahma Sutra begins. Human life actually starts when we have a sincere inquiry about Brahma, about God. Who am I? Where am I going? Where am I coming from? And what is the purpose of all this? When we seriously search for the answers to these questions, then our human life actually begins. And when we search for these things, then we see the whole world in reference to that. Rupa Goswami made it very simple, that Krishna consciousness is to accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. What will actually help me to become liberated from the bondage of ignorance and ego? What will help me to find the true happiness, the treasure of the heart, love for Krishna? If that is our standard, and we're seeing the world from that perspective, we're going to see everything in a very, very empowered way. Because we're not hankering and lamenting over the temporary experiences of the world. We want something real. Nashito vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate shita. The Bhagavad Gita explains that those who are seers of the truth, they have come to teach us that what is temporary is not real. And what is real is not temporary. We should be seeking for that which is eternal, that which is everlasting, that which has a relationship with our Atma or the soul. And the eternal relationship with the soul is Krishna. To see everything in relationship to how it can be used for Krishna. This is the special feature of bhakti. Rupa Goswami gave us the understanding of yukta vairagya. For those who have a materialistic frame of mind, we see the world from the perspective of how it will either give me happiness or distress. We want the things that give happiness, and we don't want the things that will give us distress. So we're seeing from the perspective of our own selfish desires. And those who are on the who follow the philosophy that many jnanis do, they understand all this stuff is temporary. It's all going to bring misery in due course of time. So it's all illusion. And we should disconnect ourselves, detach ourselves, renounce all of these things. Sripad Shankaracharya, essentially, if we want to be his follower, he said, first thing you have to do is take sannyas. Because trying to follow his teachings without being a true sannyasi, it's contradictory. Everything in the world is an illusion. You're supposed to be totally detached from everything and all desires, and yet you're working in the world. Take sannyas. Then you can actually traverse this path. But Sri Rupa Goswami, on behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taught this principle of yukta vairagya, that everything is sacred if we have no desire than to utilize it for the service of the Lord. To transform material energy into spiritual energy through bhakti, through a spirit of devotion. And then the world can actually be seen as beautiful if we see it in relationship with Krishna. Because we're not clinging to the things that cause suffering. We're clinging to Krishna and offering the things to Krishna. Then the things become beautiful because we see them in relationship to the all-attractive, all-beautiful, supreme Krishna. And when we read the future, the coming pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, we find very graphically illustrated the wisdom of Yati Maharaj. Because his father, Nahusha, who wanted to give him the kingdom that he worked so hard to maintain, after Yati refused, I don't want it. It's too entangling. It's too incriminating for me. All too many opportunities to be deviated from pure bhakti. His father ended up, because of his ego, of having so much power and so much this and so much everything else, he got implicated in a very, very serious Maya thing, competing with Indra over Indra's wife. And ultimately, the sages, Agastya and others, became so disgusted with him that he got cursed to become a python. That's a big snake. So from living in his royal palace, he's a snake living in a forest. Nobody cares about snakes. And if they do, it's not very favorable, except maybe another python. But as far as my psychological analysis, even other species of snakes don't like pythons. This is very. Yeah, we see so many times. We see it today in the news, the Middle East and so many places. People become billionaires making money because they're so attached to their opulence, and then they end up the rest of their life in jail. Yes, we see this happen in America recently. People become so big, but in order to do it, they cheat, they cut corners, they hurt other people. And they can't stop doing it because they're so addicted to their opulence, and then they end up the rest of their life in prison.
And when somebody tells them, you're going to go to prison if you keep doing this, don't do it. They can't give it up because they're too attached to their opulence and they can't, Maya doesn't allow them to see. The simple field worker has more opulence than a prisoner. Yes. It's just intoxication. The mode of passion intoxicates one. The mode of ignorance especially intoxicates a person. To just not see things clearly. The opposite of what you want is coming, but you won't move aside because you're so attached to what you think you're going to get. And we see these people who are, nobody even knows how much wealth and power they have. Some of these heads of states, these dictators, they have so much power and so much wealth. And yet, you know, their own citizens tear them down and put them to prison. They have to run away in exile. It's kind of like becoming a python. So King Nahusha, after pleading with his son, take the kingdom, it's so nice, son says no. Then he ends up becoming a python. And then in his absence, the next son, Yayati, takes the throne. And he really had some serious problems. You know, he made some mistakes because he became so attached to this enjoying spirit. And he ended up anyways, I don't want to ruin the story for the next Bhagavatam class givers, but it's one of the most popular stories among brahmacharis. King Yayati. If you really want to see through, you know, what the future of romance could be, it's a good story. You know, he went from being a king to, you know, he was so beaten down from the reactions to his materialistic activities that he compared himself to a goat. And meanwhile, while Nahusha is a snake and Yayati is a goat, Kenyati is a self-realized person doing his sadhana, doing his bhajan, and, you know, pursuing the goal of life. But here, the conclusion of this incredible story, Srila Prabhupada's purport, is that entering into politics, entering into big business, entering into any of these things where there's so much envy and there's so much greed and there's so much ego and prestige going on, and it's so difficult to tolerate without getting affected by these things. But one could do all these things and still attain the perfection of life if one regularly hears Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam exposes all the maya. Nasta prayeshya bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya bhagavati uttama sloke bhakti bhavati naishtaki. By regularly reading Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing people speak it, and by regularly serving those who represent the Srimad Bhagavatam by their life, one becomes free from the modes of passion and ignorance.
then one can actually perform one's duty in transcendental divine consciousness. And there are so many examples of this. We discussed Aurangzeb, discussed Yayati, we discussed some contemporary people in the world today. Their downfall was so much because they fell prey to greed and envy and pride while in such high positions. But then we have King Yudhisthira, Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Prataparudra in more recent times. They were great kings, but they were rishis, rajarshis, because they based their life on the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. Parikshit Maharaj was the king of the world, but he claimed nothing to be his own. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvalokamaheshwaram. The Bhagavad Gita tells that the formula for real peace, whoever we are, whatever we have or don't have, the formula for real peace is to understand everything is Krishna's property. Nothing is mine. And everything should be used in the service of Krishna because he's the ultimate enjoyer of everything that exists. And that he's our best, most intimate, loving, well-wishing friend. To have faith. Faith that if we serve Krishna, Krishna will do what's supremely and ultimately best for us. Krishna's our eternal father, our eternal mother, our eternal friend. That is the principle of true peace. So Parikshit Maharaj ruled the kingdom as an instrument of God's grace. He understood whatever power he had was given by Krishna. Whatever intelligence he had, he was given by Krishna. Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayora Das Adas Anudas. He was the servant of every living being. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many examples of this. Maharaj Shibi was the king of the world. And he was willing to die for the sake of protecting a single pigeon. We all know the story. The pigeon came into his palace and said, King, save me. A hawk wants to kill me and eat me. Maharaj Sibi said, I will protect you. Hawk, you cannot touch him. He's under my protection. The hawk said, well, I'm also under your protection, and my food is pigeons. So what am I going to eat? I'm not a vegetarian. And hawks don't become vegetarians. Humans can, but hawks can't. So that's my food, and you're depriving me. You have to protect me too. I need flesh. So Maharaj Shibi said, whatever weight of flesh is on this little tiny pigeon, I will cut it off my own body and give you. The hawk said, get a scale. So got a scale, put the pigeon on one side. Can you imagine? He's the king of the world. He doesn't have to do this. But this is his integrity. He cuts off a massive part of his flesh and puts it on the scale, and however much he cuts off, the pigeon weighs more. So finally, King Shibi sits on the scale himself, and it's exact same weight. He said, eat me. King of the world, he's not attached to his position. He's not out campaigning for votes. He's not extinguishing the life of any of his competitors or ruining their reputation forever or creating scandals. He's willing to be eaten alive by a hawk to protect a pigeon. Because integrity is more important than life for a great soul. And then the pigeon became a deva, and the hawk became a deva, and they said, we just wanted to show the world how great you are. Thank you. And then they gave him benedictions. And then there's Ranti Dev. Ranti Dev with his whole family fasted for so many days. They were on the verge of death. And somebody came with nice, they were in a secluded place. Somebody came with a big, nice plate of prasad. So many preparations. And his whole family was trembling and he was about to eat. A Brahmin came, said, I'm hungry. So King Ranti Dev fed him. And he was about to eat with his family. And more people started coming. A Shudra came. Shudra said, I'm hungry. So Ranti Dev fed his whole family. Then he fed the Shudra. Then whatever little was left, he was about to eat. And this man came with a pack of dogs. And he said, I'm hungry and all my dogs are hungry. So he gave all the rest of the food to the dogs. And you know what dogs are like in India. They're not pedigrees. They're the kind of dogs people go, hut, hut. So he gave it to the dogs. Now there's no food left, and he's in a secluded place. There's no place for him to get food. He's going to die. The only thing that could keep him alive is there's one cup of water left, and he's about to drink it, and a chandala comes and says, I'm thirsty, give me water. King Ranti Dev, with tears of compassion in his eyes, he folded his palms, knowing if I give that water, I give my life. He had every justification to drink it. But he prayed, I pray, O Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, I only want one benediction from you. I do not want mystic cities. I do not want liberation. I do not want power, wealth, or rulership over the world. I only want this. That in every lifetime that I take, I'm willing to give it up to show compassion to others. I'm willing to die life after life after life to show compassion to those who are in need. By giving this chandala, my water, my life, I will forever be free from hunger, thirst, moroseness, lamentation, or illusion. Then he gave the water. He didn't just say it. He gave the water. Then they all became devas and said, very nice. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. Ambarish Maharaj. Such a great king, yet so forgiving, willing to... The person who tried to murder him in the most heinous way, he spent a whole year praying for that person's protection and ultimately saved that person's life. So if we understand the Bhagavatam nicely, little Prahlad, he's 5 years old, how faithful he was to Krishna. And even though his own father tried to murder him in so many ways, he remained totally faithful to Krishna. And then he asked Krishna, Narasingha Dev, give me the benediction, my father will be liberated. Savai pung shang paro dharmo yato bhakti rhokshaje. Ahoy tiki aprati hatha yagatma supraseded.
The supreme occupation for all humanity is loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Such devotion must be unmotivated and uninterrupted, unmotivated by selfishness or ego, and uninterrupted by either the good or bad times that will inevitably come upon us. That is the only means by which we can truly be satisfied, through loving devotional service to the Lord. Little Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom greater than his father or grandfather. And in the end, he got Krishna. And he said, I was looking for broken glass, but I achieved the greatest diamond. I don't want anything else. But then Krishna himself, Prishnigarbha, he told him, I want you to become the king of the world. Go back and rule. So Dhruva Maharaj was the king. Prahlad Maharaj was the king. Ambarish Maharaj was the king. But they ruled in this consciousness to show that any one of us, in whatever occupation, in whatever status of society, we could all perform our duties in perfect divine consciousness if we just follow these principles of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the culmination of Srimad Bhagavatam as Krishna appears. When we actually live by the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, then Krishna, through pure devotion, Krishna appears within our hearts as he appeared in Vrindavan and performs his all-attractive, most intimate and sweet pastimes. Krishna's a little baby. Right in front of everybody's eyes, he kills Putana. He kills Trinavarta. He kills Sakatasura. He kills Vatsasura, Bakasura, Agahasura. Devotees are seeing him. All the Brijavasis are seeing him performing the most unbelievable feats of strength that only the Absolute Truth could do. The all-powerful Almighty. But yet when he smiles, and when he laughs, and when he glances, and when he plays his flute, the sweetness, the love of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna is so infinitely attractive that even though they see him doing all these heroic deeds, they don't think he's God. They think that it's because of our piety that God is protecting Krishna by giving him the strength to do these things. This is the culmination of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna dances with gopis, performs rasa lila. They know he's God. But Krishna's love for them and their love for Krishna is so far beyond that conception. They simply love him because he's Krishna. He's Gopinath. And this is how Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the ultimate crescendo of spiritual experience. Srimad Rasa Rasarambi Bamsi Vata Tatastata. Gopinath, who's standing under the Bamsivat tree, playing his flute, is the ultimate revelation of the Absolute Truth. And the only thing separating ourselves from Gopinath is the curtain of illusion. But by the grace of the Vaishnavas, they remove that curtain. And then we can see Krishna as he is. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. The the Srimad Bhagavatam and the person Srimad Bhagavatams, the great Vaishnavas, they teach us how to live a life in such a way that by their grace they remove the curtain. And then Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. Then we can actually see Gopinath in his threefold bending form, playing his flute, attracting our hearts into his eternal, divine, loving service. Whether we're king, whether we're business, whether we're brahmacharis, Thakur Bhakti Vinod prayed, Grihe tako vane tako, sudahari bole tako, suke duke bulo nako, varne hari nam korore, gai gora madhu sware. This is Lord Chaitanya's gift. Whether you're grihasta, as a king, or even working for the as a consultant for the Bombay Stock Exchange. You could be a self-realized saint or a brahmachari, you know, cooking dal for the Sunday feast. Doesn't matter. The curtain of Maya is removed from the beautiful darshan of Gopinath. If we just follow these principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the culmination of Srimad Bhagavatam is that we can be freed from that curtain of Maya forever. If we just offer obeisances to the Lord, associate with devotees of the Lord, and sincerely chant the holy names of the Lord. One question. Any questions? Ramdasji, would you like to speak something to all of us? Could we send the microphone? If you like, you can sit here. There's plenty of space on this big seat they created.
Thank you, Maharaj. I'm very happy to be here again by your mercy and the grace of all the Vaishnavas. So I'm feeling very fortunate. And as I was hearing your class, I was reflecting on my own life and the choices that we make as we try to do service. And reflecting on how even in the process of trying to execute service, if we're not very careful, and we don't regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam, as you were saying, and we don't regularly chant the holy name of Krishna, and we don't regularly take association of the Vaishnavas, and we don't regularly serve our Gurudev, then it's very dangerous. So I'm always praying that all great souls like yourself will be compassion on all us who are out in the world trying to do something for Krishna and keep strictly in our line of our guru and our gurus. So I'm always praying for your blessings that I can stay engaged and not have that cloud too thickly in front of my vision of what is the truth. So, very great. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Everyone, I thank you very much.